With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
It's Thursday morning, which means our Money Talks feature is back. And this morning, I want to welcome back to RCR, Australian finance and business journalist, 30 plus years of experience. We've talked with David James three or four times already. And he joins us again from Uruguay, David, not Australia this time, Uruguay. Well, that's pretty cool.
Yes, yes. And Uruguay apparently has a very long-standing sort of trade relationship with New Zealand, actually, very similar economies.
Okay, who's doing better? Them or us?
Probably New Zealand.
Yeah. And you've, had a bit of flooding in Uruguay while you've been there. I hope that hasn't been too serious.
No, not too bad.
All right. So we're going to get on to the economy of war in just a moment, which absolutely fascinates me and I'm sure our listeners. But I want to start with cash and that story that a week or so ago we found out that Macquarie Bank in Australia stopped transacting in cash. Mm-hmm. Is this something we should be paying attention to? What does this mean?
Well, I think it indicates that the banks would love to move away from cash generally, but Macquarie is not a big retail bank in Australia. It's really a sort of a global bank, you know, good at doing deals all around the world. It's not one of the majors. And so it's not going to have a huge effect on what people actually do. It's also interesting. I did a story on, was asked to do a story on, actually, I think it was Macquarie. So I looked into the cash usage in Australia, and it was very interesting. The amount of cash in the system, this is a few months ago, but it had not gone down very much at all. But the amount of cash being used for small transactions had dropped sharply because people use cards. And it was generally assumed that because people were using cards, that the overall use of cash would fall. But that's not true. What's happening instead, particularly after COVID, is people are hoarding cash.
Oh, okay.
Because they don't trust the banks and they don't trust the system. And so although the use of cash, the local cafe has gone down, the amount of cash in the system has not. People don't trust the banks and they don't trust the system. And why would you?
Yeah.
So the cash usage isn't actually dropping very much. It's going down, but it's not as much as you'd imagine.
Wow.
And as far as it's intriguing, and didn't expect to find that. And as far as actually using getting cash, you don't just rely on the banks. You can get it from the supermarkets and other places. And if they really start restricting cash, then all sorts of businesses will emerge actually giving you cash. It'll just be a market gap. I'm not at all convinced by the central bank digital currency stuff. And the cashless society is there to some extent. But as we've discussed, the central bank digital currency, the question is, does it have an interest rate on it or not? And if it doesn't have an interest rate, then you can bet the commercial banks will kibosh it because it would ruin their business.
Yeah.
And the biggest commercial banks, the ones in the United States, actually own the central bank, the Federal Reserve. So do you really think they would allow the Federal Reserve to ruin their own businesses? I don't think so.
Okay. There may be some relief coming over some of our listeners at hearing that.
Well, if there is an interest rate on it, then why would you prefer the central bank digital currency to cash?
Yeah.
Cash has no interest rate on it. So it's not as straightforward as as it looks. I don't think it's going to be as easy as just turn the tap on. I don't think it's going to be that straightforward. I think the much bigger problem is the control of bank accounts and by government and things like that. The sort of thing you saw with Nigel Farage in the UK.
Yeah, and the Canadian truckers.
They cancelled it. Yeah, that's right. That's the real one.
So that cash hoarding that you're talking about probably speaks the loudest of anything, doesn't it, as to where people are at in their thinking and how they view. Yeah, I mean, it's probably the most precise, wouldn't you say?
It's a real vote of no confidence.
Yeah.
And I don't think people generally, I mean, they're not necessarily all that well-informed about the system, which is because it's extremely hard to be well-informed about the system because it's so complex and so sprawling. But they know, they smell something being wrong.
Yeah.
And they're right. Something is wrong. Very, very wrong. And that's why they're taking defensive moves. You know, like people talk about hoarding gold, but gold is very, to use the finance term, it's not very fungible.
So that's fascinating. I want to get on to war. I mean, these two are probably linked somehow. I don't know. Maybe they're not. I'm looking at Eureka Street, where you've put up this piece. War is bad economics, but very good business. I'm going to read a couple of paras out here before we start talking about this more. In general outline, you say, war is good for business and bad economics. The marvelously titled book, War is a Racket, by Major General Smedley D. Butler, nicely sums it up. You say, there is money to be made, especially from making weapons. And what we are witnessing at the moment in Ukraine and the Middle East is simply the latest episode in a story that goes back centuries. And you remind us of former President Dwight Eisenhower famously warning in his final speech, America's military-industrial complex, the blending of business and war, posed an enormous danger to the American people and the world. We're all aware of what Dwight Eisenhower said, David, but what do you think, what are your thoughts on why he made that comment now? He was a military man, you know, World War II, Supreme Commander and all that. Yet that was a very, very ominous kind of warning, wasn't it?
Well, it's one that people quote a lot, and what many are not aware of is his original notes for the speech were his military-industrial congressional complex. So he included the politicians, but then he took it out in the actual speech, and when asked why he took it out, he said, well, I want to have some friends when I leave office. America is, well, I'll just run through some basic statistics. America spends almost $1 trillion a year for its defense budget, what's laughably called its defense budget. It should be called the offense budget. You add in the CIA, and you're looking at about $1.2 trillion. And that's roughly not far short of the size of the Australian economy.
That's incredible.
And the amount of money to be made out of that budget is just stellar. And there was a fascinating congressman was giving there was an inquiry, and he held up a bag of sort of little metal nuts, like washers or nuts, which are called bushings, which they use on. And he asked the guy, how much do you think this cost the Department of Defense? And the fellow said, well, I have no idea. And he said, well, the answer is $90,000. Cost should have been $100. It was worth about $100, right? Just a small bag of metal thingos. They charged the Department of Defense $90,000. And that's kind of symptomatic of this is also in the article, but the Pentagon did an audit, and for I think only the second time in its history they actually succeeded in completing the audit. Usually they say we can't do it. And they have about a $4 trillion asset base, and $1.9 trillion was missing.
Okay.
We don't know where it is. And I would say that you might want to go and look at the defence contractors to see if you want to find where it is.
Yeah.
The waste is just spectacular. The combined budget of Russia and China is only one third of what the United States spends. And the United States spends about the same as the rest of the world combined. And what we're seeing in the Ukraine is that it's crap. The Russians, yeah, on a budget of about 778 billion, it's less than a tenth of the US budget, is absolutely smashing the Americans and NATO, embarrassing and humiliating them. And there's a few reasons for that. One is the Russians know about war, whereas America doesn't. Its last real war was the Civil War. Russia has a consistent doctrine, which America doesn't. It just has a free-for-all. When the Russians prepare weapons and industrialize for war, their weapons are for war. In America, their weapons are for sale, and there's a huge difference. The Russians produce quantity. They don't care about quality, because why bother when you're going to blow them up anyway?
Yeah.
The Americans produce very, very high quality, very complicated, high-tech machinery, which doesn't work in war conditions. I saw Douglas McGregor was saying that, it was Larry Johnson, that the Abrams tanks that they produce can be in combat for an hour, and then they require 8 hours of maintenance and repair. In war, you need things that are going to work under extreme stress, and that means simple stuff as much as possible, not complicated stuff. The Kalashnikov, obviously, is the symbol of all that. The Kalashnikov is a horrible piece of engineering, and it never fails,
Right.
So as the dust settles, there's going to be an enormous amount of soul-searching in the United States, I think, because Russia has shown itself to be quite superior. And that's going to – well, we're really at a pivot point in, like, this statement from Russia and China essentially saying we're the enemy of the United States is splitting the world into at least two parts. And, that's the business side of it. The economic side of it is that war is terrible for economies. And you can see that with Israel. Israel's started, the attack on Gaza. Its economy shrunk by about 20%. Investment fell by 75%. It's an economic disaster for Israel. And war always is an economic disaster. You lose people, you lose lives. People who would be productive in an economic sense are pulled onto the battlefield. And even if war investment is effective as a deterrence, it has what's called a very low multiplier effect. Normally when you invest in an economy, the investment multiplies. You start up, you invest in a business, and the business deals with other businesses, and they deal with other businesses, and the effect multiplies. But with war investment or military investment, it doesn't multiply. Like, if it's successful as a deterrence, and it just sits there and does nothing,
Yeah.
So you've got this, and it's particularly pronounced in America, you've got this great business with the weapons manufacturers who then go and bribe the politicians. So you've got this circle. This is what Eisenhower meant by the congressional complex.
Yeah.
You've got this circle where the politicians have huge outlays for military, for the military. The beneficiaries of that then bribe the politicians, who then make more outlays, who then bribe the politicians, and goes around in circles. I can remember being in Washington. I don't know who he was, but he was a congressman, and he said, "We've got the best politicians money can buy."
Yeah, he wasn't wrong.
He wasn't wrong. He was both joking and serious. You can see that.
Yeah.
So you've got this collision between economic, you know, benefit and business benefit, which is extremely pronounced in the United States, and much less so. The reason that Europe didn't invest heavily in its military, and now it's really, really hollowed out, they just relied on America, is because they knew that it was dead money.
I've noticed more recently that the pitching of these huge sums of money going to Ukraine has now shifted from, well, you know, we need to supply them with weapons, to these are American jobs. It's been sort of woven in now to that benefit, what, to the economy. Is that what they're trying to say? Which is a tell, isn't it? And when you're getting to that, you're really starting to pull out anything you can think of to convince the taxpayers.
That's right. Well, that's part of that bribery. That's part of that bribery of politicians' game. Like the politicians go out and say, well, we're investing in jobs in the military in my electorate, so please vote for me. So that's the other bit of the, you know, the other leg of the circle. It's now emerging that when I said Russia has a military doctrine and the United States doesn't, it's very clear from what's been going on in the Ukraine that a war has completely changed from, you know, say the Second World War. It's all about surveillance, what they call, and missiles and bombers and drones, which are extremely precise. And you can't mass soldiers on the ground anymore. This is why Russia is taking such a long time. Because I don't know if you know Scott Ritter.
I watch him a lot.
He's a weapons analyst. Well, he went to Russia. Went to Ukraine and asked him, why is she just finishing the job? And he said, you don't understand, Scott. If we put a lot of soldiers out there, they'll all get hit, killed. We have to do it very, very slowly and out of sight. Otherwise, we lose our soldiers. And that this is all new. You know, the precision-guided missiles and the monitoring from space, the sort of, and what it means is that maneuver, what they call war maneuver, is no longer works. It's no longer about grabbing territory, and it's no longer about maneuvering. It's about attrition. It's about killing the other guy. And the casualties in Ukraine are just horrific, because the Russians, it's a war of attrition, and that's how war is going to be in the future. It's all going to be about what you can't see from space. And even the Iranian attack on Israel, was a that one of the areas they hit was the most defended air, had the best air defense in the world, and they got through it. They weren't trying to cause great havoc. They just wanted to demonstrate that they can get through it. So you've got, there's nowhere in the world that can be protected from these missiles. And the old sort of, you know, things like carrier groups and, you know, with ships, I mean, you see what's happening in Yemen. They can't do anything about it in the Red Sea. It's all the dynamics have changed, and America's, in the West generally, is very poorly placed for it because they're using an old doctrine.
Yeah.
Last couple of days, Russia's won.
I think you're right.
The West it's been exposed, and that means that America is no longer seen as the world's hegemon. You know, I mean, one of the reasons that I think that the response by the Israelis against the Iranian attack was so small was because I think the Iranians told the Americans that with their missiles, which are all below ground where you can't see them, they could take out pretty much every base and airfield in that the Americans hold in the Middle East. The Americans don't like the sound of that, but they're all target practice now because of the nature of war has changed, and that means that the Israelis sort of backed off, I suspect. And I haven't quite got my head around it yet, because it's such a big shift. But this link between Russia and China, which is backed by military power, is, I think, unraveling 70 years of American, forever wars, that they won't be able to do it in future.
That's huge. You're talking about the new style of warfare, drones and hypersonic missiles that are absolute precision, I think, within a meter or something, and think about the velocity. There's no way you can kind of shoot them out of the sky. It's amazing, isn't it? And I guess that what happens when it's, not an investment in anything that makes sense military, but a kind of huge teat with unaccounted for money just spraying everywhere. It's still amazing that and I've been to the graveyard in Arizona and seen all the planes there, thousands of them. You understand the industrial military power of the United States when you see something like that. But to be caught so short, not to see that coming, when they pride themselves as, exceptional and the technology leaders of the world, is really incredible to me.
It is. I think it's even surprised the Russians. That's what I mean by the low multiplier effect.
Yeah.
It's just dead money, and it just sits there and rusts, right? If you invested that money in, roads or, sanitation or social safety nets or things like that, you just keep multiplying. But investment in military, just if it's not used, it's just dead money. Right? It's not good for an economy. America's got away with it because the U.S. dollar is so dominant, and they can run enormous budget deficits, and people buy their treasury bills, and they can basically do what they like. And they're still very strong. But a huge reckoning, the biggest we've seen in our lifetimes, is coming. The West will still retain some advantages, particularly its financial markets, because the new financial system that's emerging with Russia at its head will take a long time. An alternative foreign exchange system for starters. And also, one thing that's, I think, completely underrated is that America has the world's biggest stock market by some way. And if you want innovation, stock markets are the place to get it. And no other, Australia has a big stock market, but it's pretty, very, very conservative. I don't know about New Zealand.
Probably a small-scale version of Australia.
Probably. And I think that's underrated, the importance of stock markets. They're incredibly important for investment in innovation. And America's still the biggest player, so it's going to have a lot of strengths, and that one I think is the biggest one. But it's going to fade. I think America would probably withdraw back to America.
Yeah.
And that leaves Europe hanging in the wind. And you're just lucky that Russia doesn't want to attack Europe.
Please don't attack. Please, and don't get with your mate China either.
These are such big shifts. That all you're getting, and from the West American leadership and the European leadership and Australian leadership, is denial. Denial. Like, no. I mean, they're still saying that Ukraine can win the war.
I know. What? Well, you know that even giving them some sort of chance, it's a losing battle. You've reminded me that when Putin announced the special military operation, one of the things he said was to degrade Ukrainians' military or demilitarize. And that, again, thinking back to that, he already anticipated how this would go. It would be a grinding process, a slow grinding process. He was absolutely right.
Because their doctrine is attrition, and it has been for a long time, and they're very, very sophisticated and very, very good at it. I mean, why anyone would underrate the Russians is beyond me. I mean, really, just look at the history. There's another element to this that these ships are so big they're hard to get your head around. But what happened in COVID was a military operation, and there was a very, very good speech by Malcolm Roberts in the Australian Senate about it, which I recommend to anyone who wants to know what happened in Australia.
I know the one you mean. Yep.
It was run by a lieutenant colonel. All the vaccines were manufactured by the US Department, subcontractors to the US Department of Defense. It wasn't primarily the responsibility of the pharmaceutical companies. It was actually the Department of Defense out of the Pentagon budget. And they owned the vials, they managed the distribution and managed the rollout. Operation Warp Speed, you know, the...
Yep, Trump thing.
Yeah, that was. There were no medical people in the leadership team, and that's one of the reasons why it was so atrociously managed. The manufacturing was a disaster because they were weapons manufacturers, right?
Yeah. They might still have been.
And I think part of the things that have been going on is that the weapon, it started off as a military operation against the people. The COVID, and then sort of morphed into the Ukraine, and then along comes Israel as well. I get the sense that these military people are going to have had a sort of a program to turn on the civilians. You know, they instead of protecting them, they want to control them. I know you've had Mike Benz on the program.
Yep.
And he gives chapter and verse on what is essentially an intelligence and military operation against the people.
Yeah.
And America, and I think it's the same in Australia, you know, just not as intense. And what I think is going, I mean, I don't know how this will play out because it's a very, very disastrous trend that, you know, your own army turns on you. But as the truth about the inadequacy of the Western military becomes impossible to ignore, they're going to turn their attention onto that and hopefully away from us.
Yeah.
maybe I'm being optimistic, I don't know.
And I think you make a point in that piece that goes back to the 30s, doesn't it? And there's some moves that were pulled on the president then. Hmm.
There's a very good film called Amsterdam, which I recommend. I saw it on the plane on the way over. And it's actually about that. The backdrop to the film is about the attempt by industrialists to create a fascist state in the United States by removing Roosevelt. And the guy that Smedley... what's his name? Butler. He was selected as the front man to initiate it. After the First World War, the soldiers got no compensation from the government, and they're absolutely furious. You know, a lot of them were very badly injured and things like that. And Smedley Butler was the sort of person who headed up that protest, you know, to get money for the soldiers, which they never got. And so they selected Smedley Butler to organize a march of veterans to Washington to remove Roosevelt. And it was backed by these industrialists who could make a lot of money out of it. And that's the backdrop to the film Amsterdam, which Butler turned around and blew the whistle and the whole thing collapsed. But after the Second World War, they just found another way to do this, exactly the same thing. They just bought off all the politicians. And we've had one war after another, courtesy of the United States. And the CIA is, the track record of the CIA in color revolutions and assassinating leaders and things is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's more than half the countries in the world, you know, and it's all coming out of the same, you know, budget. And I think the reckoning is coming, and that's huge. It is huge. The West is being constrained at the very least.
Boy, it feels like we're heading towards something, David, something, well, there's always something big, but like really big. Does that become some form of confrontation or who backs down? I was just thinking as you're talking about the US military involvement in the COVID vaccination production and distribution around the world, that, I mean, could we think of that as a tell again that they're aware that they are on the back foot militarily and anticipate that anything could be a threat now, because maybe it was just to milk the system, but to respond in the way they did, it was like, you could argue that that they may have thought that was a some kind of weapon in of itself and responded on at that footing that you'd normally do in a mechanical kind of confrontation. Do you think there's anything to that, or is that sort of going a bit off on a tangent?
It's as plausible as any other theory. You know, the problem is they never tell you what they're doing, and trying to impute motives is really difficult, especially when it's very obvious a lot of the time that they have no strategy.
Hmm.
They just fly from one thing to another, you know.
And
it's chaotic. And the leadership in Washington is just as bad as it's possible to imagine.
I know. You're not wrong.
You've got a senile old man at the top who's obviously not making any decision. And the people under him are a bunch of clowns. So it's very difficult to see a kind of coherent strategy. I don't think it is. I think it's just believing that the world hasn't changed and that they're still in control of everything. I mean, one thing I notice is when people talk about what's happening in America and Europe particularly, and Australia, particularly New Zealand, they talk about global, you know, this is global, and it's going to be a global tyranny or global whatever. And when I hear that, I think, well, you haven't realized the world has shifted.
Mm.
Just because it's happening in the West doesn't mean it's happening everywhere. And put it this way, if, like, the Russians and the Chinese, right, they're both being directly threatened by America, particularly the Chinese over Taiwan, but Russia too, like Biden repeatedly said that he wanted to remove Putin from office, get rid of him. That's just basically, you know, declaration of war. Who do you think is going to win, Russia and China combined against America? Forget it.
It's a no-brainer for me.
You know, the world's biggest industrial power and the world's best military.
And the population base.
Versus that mess, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's what essentially the Russians and the Chinese have just signaled to the world. But they don't want war. The only country that really wants war and has wanted war for decades is America.
Yeah.
Because, you know, war is terrible.
Yeah, well, no one wants it, but it seems like screaming towards it.
Yeah, well, I think America's going to blink.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that was going to be my next question, David, and we're coming up against time. Ultimately very negative effect on an economy, surely something has to give at some point. Do you reinvent the whole culture of it? Do you go down, like, you know, with a sinking ship? Do you, you know, retreat, like you said, and sort of go back into yourself? What do you think will happen?
Very hard to say, because they're lunatics, right?
Okay.
But
there's that.
But, and they're deluded. You know, they convince themselves that something's true that's not. But when reality finally intrudes, I think America will hopefully spend less ridiculous amounts of money on its military and more on its own domestic economy and just withdraw. Why do they have to keep fighting wars? You know,
well, to keep the business model alive in the end, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just going back to the business versus economy thing, it just becomes a direct battle between the business people in America who make money out of war and the people and the political system. Now, who will win? Well, quite often the weapons manufacturers win. But this is such a disaster militarily, you'd have to favour the idea that they'll withdraw and start to rethink what they're doing. Because they've convinced themselves, because they spent so much more money, that they must be so much better. And they just aren't. And I do think, at least in the medium term, there's a big rethink coming from the United States. Because at the moment, we're just in delusion. We're just in fantasy land.
Never a dull moment, David. Hey?
May you live in interesting times, as they say. Well, this is really interesting
times. Oh, well, I think we're in them now. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about as interesting as it gets.
Yes. That's right.
Given all the technology and the history and everything, it's all kind of coming together right now. David James, Australian financial and business journalist, 30 years of experience. It's always great to have you on, David, and to hear what you're thinking. So thanks again for joining us from Uruguay. We'll let you get back to what you're doing.
Thanks, Paul.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.